Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Division 6 of the Colorado Court of Appeals. We're happy to have you here today. We have one matter on the 9 o'clock docket. That is People against Marzano. I presume counsel who are seated at the council table are on that case.
Correct.
Very well. Once again, we have read the briefs in this case. We have looked at the record in the case. If that helps in streamlining your presentation to the court, so be it. I would ask that, ladies and gentlemen in the audience, please turn off pagers and telephones so that we're not bothered during the course of the argument. As you all are aware, as experienced counsel, you have 15 minutes per side, and the yellow light comes on to alert you to when the 5 minutes remain for purposes of rebuttal. With that, counsel, you may proceed.
Good morning. My name is Robert J. Corey, Jr. I represent Frank Marzano, who's present. I'm going to try to reserve, which is always a challenge, 5 minutes for my rebuttal. Your Honors, this is a case that is very complicated, and the court has read the record. It's impossible to distill all of our arguments to the 15 minutes that I'm allotted. I'm going to try to hit the high points. First and foremost, the motion to suppress in this case should have been granted. This case involves an admitted sham owner of some property, and sham is not our characterization. Sham is the testifying officer's characterization. Ownership of this property was not truly with the person who represented that it was with him.
Anthony, who is the record owner of the property?
The real owner of the property is Randall Zanstra.
Who is the record owner of the property?
The record owner of the property was Carol Dugas, because Randall Zanstra transferred the property to Carol Dugas, who then passed away. Then her executor, Anthony Dugas, executes from New Jersey a written consent to the U.S. Marshal Service to go apprehend Randall Zanstra, who hadn't been seen at the property for 10 months.
You have a case that stands for the proposition that law enforcement officers are not permitted to rely upon a record ownership of the real estate.
No, we have cases that are even stronger that say if a present occupant withholds consent and Frank Marzano is present at the home when officers show up and affirmatively withholds consent, which is uncontested, the U.S. Supreme Court in Georgia v. Randolph says that the withholding of consent by the present occupant overrides any other consent, and that's even by a present co-occupant.
And precisely what is it that he did that withheld consent? Because the record seems to indicate that he was very cooperative with officers.
Once they were inside and had him seated in a chair and they were interrogating him while he was in custody, of course he was cooperative. When the officers first showed up, though, he repeatedly said that they should leave.
But wasn't that testimony in effect contradicted by the officer saying, we don't recall him ever saying that?
Exactly. And so if the officer...
And therefore, doesn't it become a credibility issue that the trial court could resolve?
No, the officers didn't recall whether he withheld consent or not. It wasn't an issue that mattered, and Officer Deputy Eithausen testified it wouldn't have made any difference anyway, because this is an interesting case, because the facts arise before the U.S. Supreme Court comes down in Georgia v. Randolph. And in Colorado, the prior rule, as the court probably knows, was that if one occupant consents, that's valid consent.
Now, as I understand it, when the officers entered the home, Mr. Marzano was nowhere to be found. He was upstairs, and the officers looked around the home and encountered Mr. Marzano. At least their testimony is to the effect that they encountered him when he walked down the stairs.
Correct. Mr. Marzano was upstairs. Officers broke in without a warrant. They did have the written consent of the sham executor owner, so they came in there. Mr. Marzano walks down the stairs, immediately says, "What are you doing here? Please leave. Let me see your warrant," that sort of thing. Officers apprehend him, begin the search pre-warrant 4 hours before the warrant is actually issued at 3 p.m. This is all happening at 11 a.m. Officers are in the home. They're there without the consent and the affirmative refusal of the present occupant in violation of Georgia v. Randolph.
This is from the affidavit that was filed essentially after fact.
Correct. Frank Marzano executes an affidavit which was uncontested. The prosecution never resisted that affidavit, never attempted to bring any witnesses to the contrary, and in fact their own witnesses are quite equivocal about whether Mr. Marzano withheld consent or not. And most importantly, they say it didn't matter.
But this affidavit was not submitted at the suppression hearing.
Correct. It came afterwards. But it was still evidence and it was uncontested.
Mr. Corey, let me switch gears a second and ask you a question about the assume for the sake of argument that the court erred in not allowing witnesses to testify. What offer of proof was made as to what these witnesses would testify about?
Repeatedly, and as early as the suppression hearing, which dovetails into the suppression issue, there was 41 pages of medical marijuana documentation in the home at the point of the search. 35 patients were endorsed by the defense, timely endorsed well over 30 days before trial as patients, medical marijuana patients who would testify. That was the offer of proof in a defense disclosures pursuant to the Colorado Rules of Criminal Procedure.
Let me ask you about that a little bit. Operating on the same assumption that Judge Graham just articulated, that this panel agrees with you that the court erred by not allowing the witness to testify because he conflated the issue of the affirmative defense and the registry cards. In your reply brief, you say there is nothing in the record showing that Mr. Marzano would not have qualified as a primary caregiver under the Constitution, as interpreted by Clendenin. As I read the record, it's just the contrary. It seems to me under Clendenin, you have to do more than supply medical marijuana. I agree. I understand you don't agree with the ruling in Clendenin, but that's what the law is. As I read the record, both your arguments and the testimony that did come in indicate that basically what you told the court was the witnesses are all going to testify that they provided medical marijuana for medical use and nothing more, and that was your theory of defense. So what is there in the record that shows that anybody would have testified that they did anything more than that?
Well, first of all, and I appreciate the question because I knew it would come up, the Clendenin rationale did not exist when this case went to trial,
but it,
obviously. So we had no knowledge that we were going to be required to comply with that rationale, but had these witnesses been able to testify, they would have testified that Mr. Marzano gave them medical marijuana, assisted them in the administration of it, and possibly would have testified that he did more. But the point is, there's nothing in the record one way or the other because we weren't allowed to develop that record.
Well, but that's not what you told the trial court. You argued about the definition of what being a primary caregiver was, and you told the trial court just the opposite, that you said the number one and only role of a caregiver is to provide medical marijuana to a patient under the medical marijuana law, period, nothing more.
And that's what the one patient who did testify said, that was significant to that patient, the provision of medical marijuana.
Well, didn't
so I guess my response to the court's question, which makes sense, is there's nothing one way or the other that shows that we comply or don't comply with the Clendenin standard that the court articulated 2 years after the fact. So why not give us a new trial where we are allowed to call these witnesses? And I think it's quite clear that these witnesses should have been allowed. You've got a constitutional right to put on a defense. Let us put on these 35 patients. They will justify the amounts of medical marijuana because from the very beginning, the prosecution's theory of the case that was articulated in opening statement was that Mr. Marzano had too much, way too much. That's a direct quote from the prosecution, and the bill of particulars should not have been denied either, which is another issue. Had we known that was the prosecution's theory of the case, we could have tailored and articulated to the trial court that this presumptive ruling at the threshold denying 34 of our 35 patients was not proper because we could have taken the bull by the horns and dealt with the prosecution's theory of the case right away, but we weren't allowed to do that. So that's all we're asking from the affirmative defense side of this case. And the suppression side, these are two relatively independent issues, and I think both of them go our way. And then the bent of mind issue, the trial court over and over and over again, and I don't want to go into that in detail here, but that permeates both of those issues as well. But as far as the medical marijuana side of this case is concerned, if we can just call those patients, I think that many of them will be able to comply with the Clendenin standard that this court articulated later after the Marzano case had finished the trial, years after. With that, Your Honors, thank you very much. I'll reserve the remainder for my rebuttal.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Roger Bellotti, Assistant Attorney General for the state of Colorado. My registration number is 16782. Address first the suppression motion. Now, the court, when it ruled on this, pointed out that consent was shown by clear and convincing evidence. Consent in this case was obtained by U.S. Marshals in the state of New York and then conveyed to the U.S. Marshal in Colorado. According to the official records of Larimer County, Carol Dugas was the lawful owner of the property. There was nothing else to contradict that. What they had was a statement that Dugas had made in the course of an interview to a U.S. Marshal about putting her name on this property and the circumstances of it. The official record, though, however, established she was the official owner.
But an owner can't give consent to search the premises if there's an occupant of the premises.
There's no evidence. When they got the consent from Dugas' son, who succeeded her and became the executor of the estate, there was no record of any lease agreement or rental agreement. As far as he knew, nobody should be on the property. And as I recall, in the course of this trial or the suppression hearing, no evidence was introduced in the form of documents or anything else to establish there was a rental or a lease agreement.
Does that make any difference? Then whose burden is it?
Well, the burden would be on the people because it was a warrantless search. So they had to show by clear and convincing evidence that the consent was lawful.
My only point is that are you relying upon the property owner consent or the consent of the defendant?
Consent of the property owner, the executor of the estate.
But under Georgia versus Randolph, is that enough?
Under Georgia versus Randolph is inapplicable here, because under Georgia versus Randolph, you had an estranged wife who gave consent to search a residence. Now the husband, who was a co-occupant of the residence, was also on the property at the time. He refused to the consent. So the court ruled that refusal by the co-occupant, the officers couldn't be lawfully on the property. Now in this case, you have an assertion at the suppression hearing. I don't think Mr. Marzano testified. So there was no direct evidence that he was refusing to a consent to search the residence.
Was there direct evidence that he was consenting?
There was evidence that as I recall the testimony, he came down the stairs. He wasn't anywhere, the court pointed out, he wasn't anywhere to be seen when they originally entered. And I think they had knocked and rang the bell or whatever. Nobody responded. They come in, and then he's coming down the stairs. They don't know who he is. So he was detained down there until they could establish, you know, who he was and why he was on the premises. So, and then they don't have any evidence that he's an occupant. Now, I think he made some statements that he had permission from Dugas, or he had an agreement with Dugas. And I think this is quoted from the officers testifying to what he said, was that he had a rental agreement or a lease agreement. But again, there's no evidence of that agreement actually existing.
Counsel, wasn't it clear from the state of the property that he was in fact occupying it?
Yes.
So can we not assume that as the law, I think, requires us to do, that he's there with permission, absent evidence to the contrary.
Not under those circumstances, Your Honor, because...
What circumstances other than his occupation were there?
Because the situation is, you don't have any documentation that he's there. They don't have any statement from Dugas when they interviewed her, when she was still alive, that he was on the premises, that Marzano was on the premises. There's no evidence introduced of a rental or a lease agreement.
But is that necessary? I mean, I'm sure there are many people that occupy premises without a written document.
Then if you can bring forth some evidence of that. But where is the evidence that he said that? What you have is he says that to the officers, okay? He doesn't testify at the suppression hearing. Now, after the suppression hearing and the affidavit or those subsequent documents that were introduced in light of the Randolph decision, it comes out, he's saying, I did refuse. But he never testifies to that. And it's just this assertion in the affidavit. Now, you can say the affidavit is evidence, but you can't cross-examine an affidavit.
Well, did the people make any objection to the filing of the affidavit?
Not that I recall.
I guess my concern is this.
And then again, it would be a credibility question, too.
I guess my concern is this. The evidence makes clear, it seems to me, not having read the record, but relying upon your representation, that he was, in fact, occupying the premises. That being the case, is it not necessary for the prosecution at that point to rely upon his consent rather than the property owner's consent?
Not under the facts of the case, because there's no, you know, what are you doing here? And he can't establish that he's legally on the premises.
And that's his...
And the evidence from the officers was he didn't tell us we couldn't search the place.
I think you put your finger on it, Mr. Bellotti. The question is, why is it necessary for him to establish that he has a right to be on the premises under these circumstances?
Under these circumstances?
Yeah. Don't the people have the burden at the suppression hearing to establish by clear and convincing evidence that, A, he did not have permission, or B, he gave consent. He was an occupant on the premises, and he actually gave consent to search.
And by clear, there's no clear and convincing evidence, how to phrase this. The evidence was the court could come to a conclusion that he wasn't lawfully at the residence, lawfully occupying the residence. There's a lack of evidence of that. He may be there. He may be living there.
But counsel, doesn't the law presume that if you want to call it that, and a wrong is not being committed unless there's evidence to the contrary?
Okay. And what he said to the officers was, I got a rental agreement with Dugas. I have a lease agreement. And that was the end of it. And there was contradictory evidence that he did have such an agreement.
Once he tells them that he has an arrangement with Dugas to be on the premises, then what's the burden then? Isn't the burden there to assume that this person has a legitimate right to be there? And you better ask him for consent to search.
I don't think so, because there's no... What the information they had when they went in there, him simply saying, I'm here lawfully because I'm a renter or a leaser, leasee, doesn't... There's contradictory evidence of that. The executor of the estate says, I don't know if anybody should be there, and anybody that's there shouldn't be there.
Well,
Based on what I've got.
The executor of the estate didn't know that there was property until shortly after the police advised him that there was property.
Then he found in his mother's documents, the decedent's documents, that her name was on the property.
So if the decedent didn't tell the executor, prior to becoming executor, of course, about the ownership of the property, why would you think that she would tell him about defendant's occupation?
Because I would say that if she had a lease agreement or a rental agreement, she would have mentioned at the time she was interviewed by the marshals, or there would have been some kind of receipts for this, some kind of checks, payments. those kinds of things that go with rental or lease agreements. Where's the checks? Where's the rent? Where's any of this? Never introduced at the trial or at the hearing. Does the court have any other questions on any other portions of the brief?
Well, Mr. Bellotti, with respect to the question about barring witnesses from testifying, as I recall from the testimony, Mr. Marzano indicated that all of the production from the plants in the house were to go to two dispensaries. Is that what you recall?
No.
All right.
Yeah. I don't recall any testimony about dispensaries.
Okay.
Not saying there isn't, but I just don't recall it. Any other questions on the medical marijuana aspects of the case? Now, our position is on Clendenin that he didn't establish he was a primary. That decision, there was no evidence produced beyond just supplying marijuana.
But you don't argue that in your brief.
What?
What you just said. I mean, you say Clendenin,
right,
bars this, but you don't talk about the record at all. I mean, what's your position on what the record says in this?
What the record says is that was his position, was I'm supplying them with marijuana, therefore I'm a primary caregiver. That's my reading of the record. And Clendenin negates that. And the number of people, I don't know how he could be the primary caregiver for that many people. And the testimony was he was infirm himself. Any other questions from the court? Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Mr. Bellotti. Mr. Corey, you have about 5.5 minutes.
Thank you. I'll try to deal with the suppression issues first and then follow up with the discussion of the affirmative defense issues. On the suppression issues, obviously, the presumption is unconstitutionality for a warrantless search. I think we all know that. And consent is the exception to this presumption, and consent is the burden of the prosecution to show. They didn't meet that burden. They did not show that Frank Marzano was there consenting. Whether he's there under a lease, whether he's illegally there or not, is of no matter. In fact, that goes directly to the elements of the cultivation charge, because to be found guilty of cultivation, he has to be in control of the property. He has to be occupying the property and allowing it to be used for cultivation. He was indeed found guilty of cultivation. So there's no way that we can reconcile that position with a guilty verdict for cultivation. One of those has to fall.
Mr. Corey, can I apologize. Let me interrupt for just a second, just so I can get clear in my own mind what the legal standard is. I know that the trial court said he found by clear and convincing evidence what he needed to find. And I know that the burden is on the prosecution. What is the burden under the case law? Is it clear and convincing evidence, or is it preponderance of the evidence?
The burden of proof is on the prosecution.
I understand that, but what is the standard for the burden?
I believe it's preponderance of the evidence, but I'm not exactly sure about that, and we can check into that and provide a briefing for the court if the court wishes.
Thank you.
All right. Additionally, there is no evidence of an FED action, a forcible entry and detainer, an eviction action. I mean, there's zero evidence of any of that, and it didn't happen. Mr. Marzano is clearly there. He's the occupant. You don't have to produce a written lease in order to withhold consent. There's just really no argument. And under the People versus Brewer case, the Colorado Supreme Court holds to the common sense position that a landlord cannot consent. An absent landlord cannot provide consent to the entry of a person's property, because then our constitutional rights are, as renters, are subject to the whims of a landlord. So the Colorado Supreme Court doesn't allow that to happen under Brewer. We didn't hear much on the other main issue in this case about the barring of the witnesses from the Attorney General's side. And the reason we probably don't hear much from them is that at the trial court level, the Attorney General's office articulated its position that A, the registry card is optional. It's not required to be a caregiver. And this was in the Attorney General's capacity defending the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment against a subpoena. a prosecution subpoena for documents from the CDPHE, and the Attorney General is bound by that position that the registry card is optional, and therefore the designation of a caregiver on that registry card must be optional to assert the elements of the affirmative defense, which is separate and distinct from the exception. And that's a separate error that the trial court committed in this case, not allowing Frank Marzano a jury instruction on the exception because he was in lawful possession of a registry identification.
Well, let me ask you that about the exception issue. The exception only protects, as I understand it, qualifying patients and someone who is a primary caregiver. Doesn't protect other people. It just protects those two. So isn't the premise to whether Mr. Marzano qualified for the exception some kind of showing that he was in fact a primary caregiver?
Correct. And that's been our argument all along, that Frank Marzano was a primary caregiver for these patients and satisfies the definition of primary caregiver.
So it all depends on that, whether he's a primary caregiver. And would you agree that simply being, it's the opposite, I guess, of the other of the other point, that simply if you are mentioned on a registry card as a primary caregiver doesn't satisfy it? There's got to be proof that you actually are within the definition of what a primary caregiver
True.
Is.
The statutory or the constitutional definition
Right.
of a primary caregiver is an adult other than the patient or the patient's physician who has a significant responsibility for the well-being of a patient. That is independent and not dependent on designating on the card.
Right.
I suppose, I've never heard of this, but I suppose somebody could, in the old days anyway, without the primary caregiver's consent, designate some random person on their card as primary caregiver. The designation on the card in and of itself does not prove that. In this case, Frank Marzano is designated on one card. He's got 34 other cards in his possession in the home, and I can't stress that enough. This is not something that Frank Marzano concocted after the fact, despite the trial court's intimations to that effect. These were in the home on the date of search. These cards are sitting there. They're on a film that the prosecution admitted as evidence. I couldn't even cross-examine on an admitted exhibit that showed these cards posted in the home. So in this case, Your Honors, we need a new trial as to the medical marijuana defense if the suppression isn't granted. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you, Mr. Corey. Thank you again, Mr. Bilotti. Your arguments were helpful today. We appreciate it. The matter is being submitted, and you can expect a written opinion to issue in due course. That completes our 9 o'clock docket, and the bailiff may announce a recess.
Thank you.